Welcome back to the Real Arsenal Deal podcast. This is Rav, your host, recording this Monday morning here in an overcast Melbourne all the way here in Australia. How is everyone today? It's been a while. I think it's been a week since my last recording, and that's been very much reflected in the amount of times I've botched this intro. This is my eighth take, I think, and hopefully this one I actually get it because I've been fumbling and stumbling over my notes and my intro because there isn't really, look, I guess there's always stuff to talk about, of course. There's always Arsenal-related news and tidbits and little things happening in and around the club, and there's a host of internationals being played. I think some fixtures are being played as we speak. When I checked just a few minutes ago, Saliba has started for France, as expected. I believe that match has gone into extra time against Croatia in the Nations League. That the strange format that I'm still not fully across. Maybe some of my European listeners can please bring me up to speed. It's something I'm not quite across, the Nations League format. But anyway, he's playing. I think he's going to play the 120 minutes. And little old me is always nervous, just, you know, seeing the host of players that Arsenal have on various international duties, and you just hope. Just look, I'm so accustomed to each international break hearing some sort of injury, and it just depends on the severity, how long they're out for. But I'm just so attuned to this. It peaked for me. It was almost a matter of just when, not if. Robin van Persie, all the times that he used to spend on the treatment table in his first few years at Arsenal, he'd put a little run together. He'd show glimpses of form and quality that made him just such a spectacular player to watch. He'd go away for international duty, and like clockwork, he'd have some kind of ankle injury, ankle strain or something, and then the initial diagnosis is like, yeah, okay, it's a minor one, could be a couple of weeks, but he comes back to the club, and then there's that scan, the scan of doom, and it's ligaments, and he's out for 3, 5, 6 months, and it's just, that's the cynical side of me, right? I've been burnt so many times by that, as probably many Arsenal fans, that how many times do we see our players go on international duty, come back, and just in a different state, and maybe every club does this, right? I fully appreciate and respect. I do live in a bit of an Arsenal bubble. I don't pay too much attention to other clubs and tracking things and tracking international matches and tournaments, etc. So maybe all clubs, maybe all fans have this cynical side of them too. But for me, I just want it to be done and dusted. Do you know what I mean? And I wish them the absolute best, and I hope they perform, and hope they deliver for their team. And it means so much to them, of course. And I just want them back fit and healthy and doing their thing for Arsenal, because that's where my priority tends to be. I know that's selfish, and that's just my perspective. So I try not to pay too much attention to individual matches, aside from the fact, just when I Googled this morning as I was just making some notes to prepare this recording, I saw that Saliba had been named on the team sheet, and hope he gets through unscathed, as I hope everyone else does, of course. So that was a long intro. How is everyone? It's been odd, hasn't it? Just without Arsenal matches to tune into and follow. And for those of you who have listened to me in the past month or two, I think some of this has been a bit of a welcome change, because the unrelenting nature of December and January, I think it took a huge toll on the players, and that's been reflected in the amount of injuries, some season-ending injuries as well to Havertz. It's also been, I think there's been a mental toll to it too, because Arsenal, we've just had a really tough time of it. We've seen, we were right in the thick of a title challenge that, unfortunately, look, we don't need to go through all the whys and the hows and how was this allowed to happen. I think we all know that. It's been covered repeatedly, and I'm sure you don't want to listen to another version of rehashing all that sort of stuff. But just, you know, just watching Arsenal sort of fizzle out in the league, and Liverpool steamrolling away, the severity of the injuries that we've suffered, and it's just been a tough time. It's just been a bit of a slog, a bit of a grind. Of course, you're not going to be at your fluent, capable best without some of your best players in key attacking areas. So sometimes the football itself has been difficult to endure. We've had to shift mentalities in the matches. We've been about, like, just don't concede anything, be rock solid at the back, take control, and hope we can nick one at the other end. And it hasn't been quite as enjoyable. So little breaks here and there. I think everyone needs a bit of a refresher and a bit of a step away as we then look into when the Premier League kicks off again. Arsenal do have a very intense few weeks upcoming, and we all know what we're referring to. The jewel in the crown, of course, is that Champions League tie against Real Madrid. And it's probably the biggest game that I can recall. I was just thinking about it this morning as I was brushing my teeth, as I tend to do, think about a lot of things Arsenal at random moments and times of the day. I was thinking to myself that, look, since the Champions League final, there's a number of examples you can put right in this top tier bracket in huge ties that we've had. You know, we had that semi final against United 2009-10 from memory, and that went to crap, of course. Well, Ronaldo killed off the second leg very early with that free kick and the mistake. It should have been saved, and unfortunately went in, and they killed off the tie pretty early, and that was just a difficult remaining match to watch because you knew that the result was inevitable. But we've had some big fixtures, of course, Bayern Munich a number of times, Barcelona. We've had some very, very big matches. I'm not pretending that we haven't. Just in terms of stature, in terms of quality, right? This is Real Madrid. It's just one of the quirks in the European draw that how many times in the last, say, 19, 20 years since we last played Madrid, Thierry Henry, of course, the match winner in that tie at the Bernabeu. How many times have we played them since? It's zero. But it's strange because you then compare and contrast to how many times have we squared off against Barcelona, Bayern Munich, even other teams that we just tend to get regularly drawn against, whether in Europa League or Champions League, Olympiacos, PSV. Right, we've had a number of ties against other teams, and just a quirk that we haven't come across Real Madrid. And I know a big contributing factor to that, of course, is we haven't gone deep in competitions. And the way the seeding works, the pots that we're placed in, we don't really meet them in the group stage. But long point short, like, what a glamour tie it is to finally have them. And it seems that Manchester City play them regularly as well in recent years. Liverpool do. Just huge for the club. Huge, enormous. And just to be there at the Emirates, or if you're one of the lucky lucky few thousand who'll be able to travel to the Bernabeu in the away fans. Like, what an experience. It's the kind of stuff that you're just going to be talking about for years and years after, and sharing stories with your friends, kids, grandkids, like, just that you were there and you could soak up that experience. And hopefully, if it goes the way we all want it to, it'll be one for the ages, won't it? It absolutely will be. So a few things I wanted to talk about in this recording. I've touched on the internationals, of course, but you can't not mention two of the biggest talking points that have come out of it. I'll start with the bad news first, I guess. Calafiori's injury. Like, I winced, I cringed when I saw that footage. I could only watch it once or twice. Like, for me, I guess it's more triggering. I've had some nasty knee injuries in my younger days, requiring full ACL reconstruction, and it's just not something I can stomach, really, even after all these years post surgery. I actually had two surgeries about it, because the first one was there were some complications, and for the next 12-18 months I was in quite severe pain, and it needed a second procedure. But it looked nasty, of course. The rumblings from what I've seen that have come out of the Italian camp and Italian media is that it's not that serious. So, again, like, what's the definition of serious to you and I? It could be very different. I consider 2 or 3 weeks, right? It's still a pretty serious setback, because in the context of what the fixtures hold for Arsenal, that's very much overlapping with the Real Madrid tie. I think we need all hands on deck. And one of the things that has emerged in the last, say, 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks since the Dubai trip, and since we lost
Martinelli and Havertz to injury in that time, what's really emerged is the usage of Calafiori as an attacking threat. It's like he offers something so unique. Yes, I know we have a host of options at left back. No two players are like for like, of course. That the same can be said on the right side at fullback. White and Timber, of course, they're both of the highest quality and both can interchange with each other at right back, but they offer different things. They offer different profiles. White on the overlap, whereas Timber doesn't tend to do that. However, Timber, you could argue, is a much better lockdown one-on-one defender to shut out the opposition winger. So no two players are like for like identically. And Calafiori really is that unique profile. He just causes mayhem. He's just got that attacking flair and talent and instincts as well. The way he can just glide through very gracefully throughout the midfield. Obviously, he's been given license and freedom to do that by Arteta, and he's got good coverage behind him to protect those spaces that he leaves exposed. And then all of a sudden, he's popping up in and around the edge of the box, taking shots on goal. Sometimes our shots on goal, he's very much in the he features very highly in those statistics that he is taking shots on goal and actually hitting them on target. So all of a sudden, to face the prospect of not having him, even as a substitute option, to throw on and just cause 25 minutes of mayhem running at tired opposition, like, that's a blow to Arsenal. It's a massive blow. And it's just so unfortunate. This stuff just seems to keep happening to him. It's unfortunate. It's an accident. What can you do, right? Twist and turn your body and just... You slip on the surface or you slip with your boots. I just don't know, right? It's just a real shame it's happening, and it's causing these disruptions, because it's very much been emblematic of his season. There's been persistent quality, but then in between, persistent niggles and setbacks and a lot of the stop-start nature. You ask any professional athlete, any professional footballer really, that the constant setbacks and stop-start, how it impacts your training, recovery, building up your load, not having a pre-season, right? Just you ask any of them, they will all say that it absolutely makes a difference. It makes an impact on what they can produce on the field. So real shame that has happened again, but we'll just wait to see. I believe he's now back in London, back at the club for assessment, and just we'll wait for the next few days to hear what comes of it. Hopefully it's good news. Equally, in terms of who's come back to the club, my understanding is that Gabriel is also back. He flew back early from international duty for Brazil. Thankfully, no injury. Thankfully, it's mostly to do with, I'll just read this correctly. Yes, okay, that's right. So he got a yellow card in their first international, which means that whatever tally he was already on before, it means an automatic suspension for the next match. So there was no point in him hanging around in South America for another 5-6 days. It's a very long, arduous trip all the way back to the UK and different time zones, right? Different adjustments to get back and acclimatize, jet lag, and then you know, rejoin Arsenal training. So I'm just really glad that it's so refreshing that a common sense approach was taken. It's just like, you know what? You're not going to play anyway. Do you want to head back to London? It's like, yep, sounds great. Yes, please. And he's back. Like, this is fantastic. Like, why can't things just be this straightforward to begin with, right? Maybe I'm too simplistic in nature, but I love the common sense approach. Just get him back, get his feet up, let him reacclimatize, right? You're dealing with different time zones, weather zones, weather patterns, all the little 1%ers, they make a difference. Right, so it's great that he's back, and he can just do his thing for the next few days as we gear up to Arsenal's return next week against Fulham. So, okay, so then the last one to talk about in terms of international roundup. How can we not? You're probably wondering how have I taken this long to even mention it, and I apologize. If you're listening, I apologize to you, mate, because what an incredible journey, what an incredible debut. I'm thrilled for him. It's strange, right? Because I've got this sort of parental instinct, and I've had this for quite some time, ever since becoming a dad myself. But watching the likes of Bukayo break through, and I just got that protective element for them. I want the best for them. I'm just so proud of what they represent. They represent Arsenal, the values and the culture, and the fact that they've been at the club since they're 7, 8,
9 years old. You know, I have a 6 year old myself and a 10 year old myself. So it's like to be part of something like that and then represent them all those years later, like just incredible. So much pride for their families, right? Their close friends, all their coaches, their teachers, their support networks. Like it's incredible to see what then they can produce on the field as men now. It I'm so proud of him. It's phenomenal. It really is an incredible rise. Like just in the last few months, I'm not sure anyone saw this coming. I certainly didn't. I didn't really factor in how many senior minutes would I thought that Miles and Ethan would have gotten this season. I don't think it would have been anywhere near what we've seen. They're both now integral players. They're basically first 11 players. I don't think anyone bats an eyelid when we read the team sheet and we see them, two of them named respectively in their positions. It's just been normalized. It's like, cool, fantastic. Yep, Ethan's on the right, Miles left back, no dramas, fantastic, off we go. This is not normal. They're teenagers, right? who have just broken through in their first few months of senior football. It's a testament to them, their character, the qualities of them as individuals, human beings, the freedom and trust that they play with, the empowerment that Arteta has given them. It really is a test. This stuff just doesn't happen. This is not luck. This is not luck. That's what I'm trying to emphasize here. This is pure hard work and dedication and support and all power to them. Like it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. It's excellent too to see so many of the prominent voices in the Arsenal media landscape. You probably know who I'm talking about. Everyone from Ask Blog, The Vision Podcast, Tim Stillman in his columns, Charles Watts, Tom Canton. It's just been great for them just to continually call out the crap for what it is. I'm not sure how much airtime to give this because I've covered this before as well, right, in the fallout to the thumping win over City and the way that the media went for him, like they were, like a chasing pack, like wolves, right? They were just salivating over, okay, here's another young, black, successful, exuberant, confident young man breaking through and representing who he is on the pitch, right, with his personality. You saw how they went for him. The reaction to the snippets of him arriving at England camp last week, right, being met by his teammates, his coach, and just the way they go after all this crap around the way he dresses and the smile on his face. Come on, let's call it for what it is, right? Ian Wright says it better than me, right? It's just the same treatment that we've seen time and again for Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, Bukayo Saka, Jadon Sancho, and a host of many, many, many who came before and even the decades before. Ian Wright, Rocky, let's call it for what it is. It's just that institutional racism element. As uncomfortable as it may be for some to acknowledge or admit, this crap does not persistently happen. It does not happen recurringly with white players. It just doesn't. There's something about the players of colour, who they represent, seeing them successful, seeing their personalities on display. It can just bring out that awful, disgusting element. And now, unfortunately, we have ways to really amplify that hatred, that voice, that ranting and raving voice. And there are platforms that thrive of this. The algorithms thrive of this sort of stuff. And it's just really, really unfortunate. And I'm just so glad that so many call it out for what it is, not give it too much oxygen, because that's some of what these people actually seek when they post and circulate this sort of crap, but just call it for what it is. And I'm really, really proud that he got out there 20 minutes into his debut, scores a goal. You know, shut the F up. Like that's the way I view it. Like, just good on him, and success is going to be one of the best responses. Just go out there, do your thing, be who you are. He's got wonderful family around him. Some of the work his mother does in this space is quite incredible from the snippets I've seen, the YouTube videos that I've watched of how she represents herself. And like he comes from an amazing place, and more power to him. I'm so proud of him. So that was mostly the international roundup. I'll just shift in gears now. I'll just want to talk a few minutes about just I guess this break has also just given an opportunity for reflection, the final international break of the season, about how Arsenal's season has gone. And I do understand that my viewpoint is not going to be for everyone. I know there's many dissenting Arsenal fans who look at the choices that have been made this season or not made in terms of the transfer market, some of the tactics, the way Mikel is set up, and we've seen we've seen a change of style where Mikel has more so wanted to exert dominance and influence over the match and control rather than the natural flair and the attacking instincts that we've sometimes seen of Arsenal teams in the past. And I get that whole topic's been covered a lot. I know there's not everyone agrees with my viewpoint on it, and you're probably not going to agree and you may not like to acknowledge the extent of the unfortunate situations we've seen ourselves in this season. I'm talking about the red cards. I'm talking about the cluster injuries. I'm talking about just freak occurrences that you see. You know, Mikel Merino is one of his first training sessions at the club, right? Since he was signed last summer, then he's working on a duel. They're working on training drill in training. And unfortunately, he collides with Big Gabby Fours and does his shoulder, dislocates his shoulder. And he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, like there's some things you just cannot mitigate for, unfortunately. Some things that we absolutely do need to own and be accountable for. I've spoken at length in the past that Kai Havertz in Dubai, that when he extends his leg out to block a shot in a training drill and his hamstring tears off the bone and he needs surgery, that is not necessarily bad luck. Yes, the actual act itself is bad luck. I mean, it's a very severe injury to cop from a movement like that. However, the load he was carrying in the previous 4 to 6 weeks, that's not bad luck. I've spoken a lot about the impact of that 120 minutes in the FA Cup against Manchester United, the turning point of our season. I refer to that game, and that's going to live with me for a long, long time. And it's just a really, really sad state of affairs. It's an awful set of combinations of things with him and Odegaard. Shouldn't have been out on the pitch. They were unwell in the lead up before that, but we were running on fumes by that point, playing every 3 days. Jesus, who had just come back into form, showing the best form he's had since the opening few months of when he signed for the club pre-World Cup. He hasn't been the same since, unfortunately, because of those recurring knee injuries and his stop-start nature since. He was in sublime form, and then he does his ACL in that match in the first half. Havertz, Odegaard, everyone had to play 120 minutes that game. We don't even lose or exit a competition easily, unfortunately. And missing penalties and Havertz missing some gilt-edged chances, the abuse he copped afterwards. I've spoken how this was the catalyst for me starting this podcast. And again, no one wants to hear this stuff. No one wants to hear the bad luck and the injuries. It absolutely matters, though. It really does. When you look at Arsenal's season and we see that, unfortunately, we fizzled away at the key moment in the Premier League title. It was there to be won, right? We were right in it. Saka being injured, and then the other cluster injuries of forwards. I mean, these are season killers. They are. And no one wants to hear this part, all right? And I get it. All you need to do is look down the road in North London and look how a team has just completely capitulated under injuries. I've had 15 or 16 Premier League losses. It's utterly ludicrous, mind-blowing. If anything, for Arsenal to still be second, yes, I know the gap has somewhat closed with the chasing pack, City and Forest and Chelsea. Thankfully, we beat them last week, right? So we're holding them at bay. I know that the gap isn't what it used to be. We were clear second, and now we've just come back a little bit in the pack. But the point I'm trying to make is no one wants to hear this. We shouldn't be satisfied or take pride that we're second, and finishing second 3 years in a row is good enough for the ambitions that this magnificent club has. I get all that, and Arteta says it better than I can repeatedly. What I'm trying to say is that we haven't completely fallen in a heap. We haven't completely spiraled out of control, and it's so important that we ensure this does not derail in the remaining, what, we've got 6 to 8 weeks left of the season.
the Real Madrid tie is enormous, and Saka's doing his absolute best from what we hear in the background to be a part of it. Because if we somehow can do something special, somehow it'll be one for the ages. Now, this is like the head versus heart, right? My head tells me how this is going to end up. It's Real Madrid, okay? We know that they own this tournament, and there's a special sauce that they bring to Champions League at this time of season, and also a special sauce in terms of some of the officiating decisions that we see go their way. And I know that's a contentious topic, because in terms of officiating decisions, we've all seen how we've suffered this season as well for things that are just no longer even a thing, right? Like I look at the way the Chelsea game was adjudicated, the way Fofana, he had like five or six yellow cards, utterly mad. Can you imagine if an Arsenal player did that? Stomping on someone's thigh and just giving them that smug look, and just, you know the narrative. You just know it. I can close my eyes and see the headlines. What was he thinking? You know, that ill discipline, right? Another deserved red card for Arsenal. By the letter of the law, blah, blah, blah. You gave me no choice, blah, 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 something. So it's just crap. You know what would have happened. We would have copped those decisions, and we'd all just have to swallow it and bear it as if we're like, you know, as if we're criminals. This stuff does not get officiated the same way elsewhere. And I'm sorry just to call it like it is. It just doesn't. Sometimes there's this early season edict where you always hear them say that they all beat their chest saying, oh, we're going to clamp down on this or that this season, whether it's simulation or what do they call this crap? Delaying the restart. That's it. Thank you. It's the official term, delaying the restart. And they enforce it so sporadically. They just pick and choose when it applies and when it doesn't. But after the first few months, then it's just back to usual, back to regular programming. Anyone can just behave in any other, and they just don't care. As the season progresses and goes on, what happened to all this chest thumping, that this early season edict? It just gets to a point where it no longer seems to matter to be a thing. But the problem for us is we don't get those results back. We don't get those opportunities again. I'm absolutely confident that the Manchester City match and the Brighton match, those are 4 points dropped. We were in control of those games. We would have seen them through. Then Saliba in the reverse fixture against Brighton, Saliba accidental head clash, it's given a penalty, right? Those are 2 more points dropped. You just don't see these decisions elsewhere. Denying a goal score an opportunity again, you know, I actually don't argue against the red cards we cop for Lewis Skelly and Saliba earlier in the season in a loss to Bournemouth, I recall. I do believe those were deserved red cards. However, when you see like for like so many other instances that look almost identical, fits the criteria, and they don't get red carded, it's bizarre. Look at Konate against PSG. I just happened to tune in at the time. How is that not a red card? How is that not a red card? And it was so much closer to goal too, basically on the end of the edge of the box. It's baffling. Look, I'm sorry I've gone on a bit of a passionate side rant here in terms of season's reflections. I think all this stuff matters. You cannot just assess Arsenal's season and where we sit now on the table without the context, and the context absolutely matters. We've just been very unlucky, and it doesn't always mean that we failed. I do believe the failures that we have demonstrated do need to be called out. We failed in the transfer market last summer, absolutely. And we failed again in the January window, right? We couldn't what's the word I'm looking for? Like, we couldn't offset, whatever we did in January was not going to be sufficient to offset the failure in the previous summer window. However, we could have done something just to give us an option, give us some breathing room to try and salvage where we still were positioned in the league table. And we didn't do that either. So crucial now that we learn from these mistakes. At the time of recording, Andrea Berta has still not been officially confirmed. My understanding from what I've heard Charles Watts and others say, that they're expecting that later this week to be officially confirmed. And I'm sure he's already started in the background. Like, you can't not. When you know your appointment is imminent, right? He'd be working on things behind the scenes, right? The leverage of his relationships, his contacts, across a very distinguished career across the European market and the global market, agents, representatives, advisors, intermediaries. I'm sure there's stuff that's just, you know, he's making himself known, making himself aware. There's stuff that he can just slip straight into from day one, hit the ground running. It's just such a crucial summer ahead for the club, right? Because we're right in that time period where we can capitalize here on this, on the resurgence of Arsenal, the project, as they call it, in inverted commas. We are right in the thick of that. Get one or two key signings right, get some key renewals, and we all know who they are. Oh my goodness, this could be enormous. And we should not be selling Gabriel, right? I know it's generational wealth that he's going to likely be offered from Saudi Arabia, and the club, you know, needs to do their absolute utmost to reward and remunerate him accordingly, because he's absolutely critical to everything Arsenal is doing. He's probably had the better season than Saliba, as much as I believe Saliba is the better centre-half, so to speak. I believe Gabriel, and he's also a leader. He's really emerged as an on-field leader of the team. He represents Arsenal so well in a leadership capacity, and an absolute monster at set pieces. Probably in terms of a goal scoring threat for a centre half across the world, I'd love to hear of a bigger threat than him. His name would be right up there. He brings fear into the opposition, and I think he's absolutely essential to everything Arsenal wants to do in the next 18 to 24 months. So it's so important that we lock down these players and build on where we've got to, because we are right on the cusp of greatness. And you know, you just never know what we can do against Real Madrid. You just never know. Head versus heart. However, if you can't believe, if you can't have some hope, then like what's it all for, right? Because the league campaign fizzling out as it did, right, we need this. We need something to cling on to, just to extend the energy, the momentum of the club going deep into April in the European campaign, hopefully a semi-final awaits. But let's just see. Look, those are my thoughts on the season reflections. We have absolutely made mistakes. We have not been faultless, not at all. And the club absolutely needs to take stock how and why that was permitted to happen, and ensure we don't botch it again like that, because one or two bad windows can derail a project. And I'm just hoping that we ensure this is just a blip in the radar this season, and not something that that spirals out of control after many, many years of intentional hard work to bring us back to the cusp of greatness. And okay, so just before I sign off on this one, there's time here at the end for some listener questions, and I've got an absolute cracking questions from a question I received on Blue Sky from Matt's All Folks. And once again, thank you so much for your support and encouragement of the pod. One of my loyal listeners from day one, who continues to send such positive feedback and kind words my direction. So thank you so much, Matt. I'm going to read out your question word for word here. And it says, hey, another top pod. I have a question for you. What's your favorite kind of goal? Team goal, free kick, chipping the keeper, banging from outside the box, or individual brilliance? For me, it's chipping the keeper. Thank you so much, Matt, for the question. It really, really got me thinking. So out of the choices you mentioned, for me, I always liken this style of goal to Alexis Sanchez. For me, it's a banger outside the box. I guess you can also combine it with individual brilliance, because it's an element of both, isn't it? It's like taking the game by the scruff of the neck. It's just like, hey, give me the ball. Get out of my way, right? I'm just going to charge through and just crack one in from you know, 20, 30 yards. Like, for me, I love that kind of goal. And maybe it sticks out more so in my head when I thought about the question, because it's something that we don't see too much from Arsenal. The current day version, sorry, I should qualify. The current day Arsenal is much more choreographed, I feel, sometimes to our own detriment. I do understand there's those rumblings around. Sometimes people do, quite rightly, they have a valid point, I feel, that just some of our build-up play just has to be so pinpoint, so perfectly choreographed and aligned for us to carve out an opportunity. I really love to see players just have a go, because you never know what's going to happen. And in the last two or three years, Saka does it. Odegaard's shooting has dried up a little bit, unfortunately. Ethan now has scored a couple of these goals. His emergence in the last few months, he's taken goals, cutting
He's taken chances, cutting from the right, get onto his left foot, in and around the box, and just drill one at goal. I love that sort of stuff. However, in terms of overall, if I may just extend beyond the choices here in the question, for me, I absolutely love a back-to-front goal, meaning when you play out directly from the back and you just cut the opposition team open, just go the length of the pitch. That can be in many different forms, all right? We've seen sometimes Raya catches the ball and one of his first instincts is to look straight up, release play either by foot or by a quality throw, and we just sort of charge up. We've done a few of these in the last couple of seasons. We've also done one. I remember, just someone please correct me if I'm wrong, was it early day Arteta or was it end of the Emery era? It was that Martinelli goal against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, I believe. I hope I don't botch this. My memory is a little bit hazy. I believe it was from a corner and Martinelli took the ball all the way through to score. It right in front of the way end, actually. And in fact, I remember in the celebrations, I know definitely Lacazette was there. Guendouzi was there as well. Guendouzi. So that speaks to the era at the time. I loved that type of goal. Just going back to front, cutting them open and finishing it off. The best one that I can cite for now, if anyone remembers Andre Arshavin, the four goals at Anfield, I think 2010-11 are we talking, maybe. I think it was in his first few months at the club when Wenger signed him in the January window. It was from a corner. It was 3-3 at the time. It was like the 91st or 92nd minute from a corner, and Liverpool needed to win that match to keep pace with United in the Premier League title. And Walcott ran all the way across the right, and Arshavin at the bottom of the screen. I remember like it was last week, me watching this live. It was around 5 a.m. in the morning here, right? It's like one of those ridiculous fixture times that I've been up for many, many times in my Arsenal-loving life. So then at the bottom of the screen, I saw Arshavin emerge. I said, oh, is he coming? And Walcott held the ball up beautifully, right on the right. Like, the defenders couldn't keep pace with him. I remember the commentary referred to Walcott as the roadrunner, and he absolutely was. He was just charging through. No one was going to stop him. And he bought himself the time to be able to look up, wait for the option to emerge. Arshavin's just charged forward, sprinting forward. He's already scored a hat-trick by this stage. Walcott cuts the ball across, and Arshavin just a rifle of a shot, like ridiculous. It was never going to miss. Goalkeeper was just standing there. I don't even think he tried to save it. It was just beyond him. Rocketed into the goal. Four goals to Arsenal, four goals to Arshavin, right in front of the away end. The commentary just screamed out, four! And Arshavin's holding the iconic image now. He's holding his fingers up, sort of half shrugging his shoulders, thinking, what the hell just happened? Whilst also he's got four fingers up, gesturing to it. It was mayhem. I was losing my shit. Sorry, I'm not sure if I can swear on this podcast, right? But I was losing my mind watching that, jumping up and down off the couch, right, while I'm trying to get ready for work and whatnot. It was one of the best goals I've ever seen. If anything, I can't not mention that match as well, because if anything encapsulated that era of Arsenal and that sort of period of Wenger's Arsenal, how can you score four Premier League goals and not win the match? How can you go to Anfield, go away in the Premier League, score four goals, and you still end up being a draw? Because there still was enough time from the restart for, I believe, Torres it was. I was still in delirium celebrating, right? Torres went down the other end and equalised, and the match finished 4-4 and a draw. It was just you can't not mention it in that context as well. But for me, that's definitely my favourite type of goal. Thank you so, so much for the question. Really, really got me thinking. I love this stuff. Anything else anyone can think of, or Matt, that you can think of, any viewers, any listeners, please send it my way. I love talking about this stuff. Love reflecting on anything to do with Arsenal. I'd very much, as always, appreciate, and I'm very grateful for you listening this far. Please send any feedback or comments my way. I read every single word, just like I just have. Thank you so much. And please like, subscribe if you listen to this on YouTube. It certainly does help the algorithm, and I'd very much appreciate a review or subscribing on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever platform you're on. Those ratings really do matter as well. And just in wrapping this up again, thank you so much again. I'll be back on in a few days, even though Arsenal still aren't back to action until early next week against Fulham. I'll be back on for my next recording. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to sign off this one right now. Stay safe wherever you are in the world. Look after yourselves and come on, Arsenal.